Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
If it please the court and counsel, I'm Dave Boswell of Spokane, and I represent Jim Atkinson.
You wish to reserve any time?
I'd like to reserve 5 minutes, Your Honor. Thank you. I represent Jim Atkinson, the personal representative of the last will and testament of Bert Hook. Your Honors, this is an appeal from a summary judgment of dismissal with prejudice as a matter of law, and Mr. Atkinson's petition for probate of Bert Hook's last will. Review in this court is therefore de novo, as if it was not tried at all in the San Juan County Superior Court. I count four issues, maybe five with the sub-issue. The issues on the appeal, Your Honors, are whether or not the trial court may defeat a testator's intentions by construction of the statute. The second issue is whether or not the trial court may defeat the legislature's intention by construction of the statute. The third issue...
Where this will was executed? Isn't that the real issue we're trying to discern here?
That is the premise on which the trial court threw it out, Your Honor, saying it was executed in Washington. My answer to the question might be that it all depends on the meaning of the word.
So then we're talking about statutory interpretation. I think that was your second issue. Can the trial court defeat the intent of the statute?
Of two statutes, Your Honor. I call the first statute the statute of wills, and the foreign wills proviso of the statute of wills, which deems a valid, facially valid foreign will valid in Washington. The second statute that I'm referring to is 1112-230, which, of course, is the legislative enactment that requires courts to give due regard for the intention of the testator. So, of course, we're looking at the whole things and trying to harmonize the probate scheme, but those two are the statutes which we submit the trial court contravened by throwing the case out of court. And I want to remind the court that it did so only after, at first, giving the meaning to the words in the statute that gave effect to the testator's intentions.
Could I direct your attention then? Let's focus on the proviso in the statute of wills. And you talk about it as in terms of facial validity, but those words actually aren't in the statute. We have to look at the actual words of the statute. Would you not agree?
I think you look at the context in which the words were used, Your Honor. I don't think you can read them in isolation.
But wouldn't we would start out by using the words in the statute, and the words in the statute talk about whether a will is legally executed. Now, you have argued in your brief that the will was executed in Arizona because that's where Bert Hook signed it, the will that you're promoting.
That is one definition of the word execute or execution, as we briefed extensively in the trial court.
Well, was it fully executed after he signed it under Arizona law or Washington law?
It would depend on the meaning of the word, Your Honor. And I don't mean to be flippant, but when it says that the place where executed, it means in the context of the probate scheme. And that means giving effect to the legislative intent. And then I'm going to ask the question another way. Could the legislature in 1917 have imagined or envisioned that an Arizona will might make its way to Washington for the last signature of the attesting witness and then have it thrown out, defeating his intentions, defeating the legislature's intentions? And my answer would be no. In 1917, we were hardly living in a world of emails and scanners and faxes and commercial jet travel and whatnot. I think what the legislature intended was that a valid foreign will is valid in Washington, and as Judge Eaton has held and found, it's facially valid, and that the clear legislative intent of the statute of wills provided. I have 5 minutes reserved, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. Catherine Smith, representing the estate of Bert Hook and the personal representative, Jerry Hook. Let's look at the statute, because that's, I think, where we all recognize we have to go. And that's not showing up on your screen. There it is. So the first provision, of course, is the Washington provision, which requires that a will be attested to by two or more competent witnesses by subscribing their names on the will while in the presence of the testator and at the testator's direction or request. I think there has to be agreement here that this will was not executed under the law of Washington, because the second witness, to the extent that the person signing as a notary was a witness at all, and of course under Arizona law they would not have been under the Muter case, signed the will in Washington. I agree that the question is whether it was executed. For those purposes, until the witness signed, and in fact I think that the law is quite clear, and we talk about this in our briefs at mostly at page 25, that execution means the last act necessary to make a document effective.
There seems to be law on that, but the other part of your argument is that not only is the will not fully executed until it has all the necessary signatures, but that it is executed, the full execution of the will occurs in the place where the last signature takes place. What is the law that you primarily rely on for that?
Well,
why couldn't it just as easily be Arizona, where you know, two or three out of the signature, or you know, the testator and arguably one witness signed in Arizona?
Yes. Well,
and then somebody else
signs.
Why can't it be deemed executed in Arizona, since that's where two out of three signatures?
Well, there's no law in Washington or Arizona that suggests that the law of the state where the decedent signed is where the execution takes place, because it's the last act.
That's the opposite, either.
Well, let's look at the provisions for foreign law then in this statute, which is the section that comes after provided that a last will and testament. And just for purposes of argument, let's say that it could have been executed in Arizona.
All right.
Just for purposes of argument, I'm not conceding that.
I understand.
In order for that will to be enforceable in this state, however, that would have had to have occurred before the decedent's death under our statute. And you can tell that by looking at the language of the statute. It says that a last will and testament executed in the mode prescribed by the place where executed, and here we've come to this circular issue of what does executed mean. Because if it means the where executed, clearly this will was executed in Washington if that last act was what was necessary to do it. Or of the testator's domicile.
Even if it was executed in Arizona.
Because
then you're making a second argument, if I understand your argument. Because mm-hmm. then you're going on to the phrase, either at the time of the will's execution or at the time of the testator's death.
That's correct.
That's your second argument.
That's our second argument.
It has to be at the time that Bert Hook, so I guess for purposes of assuming that it was executed in Arizona, it has to be at the time he went to the notary's office and he signed it and the notary signed
correct.
It.
Correct. And
which it wasn't. Or at the time of his death, which it wasn't.
That's correct.
And that's consistent with, I take it, the first part of the statute, which says that for a law that there's no question that it's a Washington will, that it has to be signed by the testator, obviously when he's alive, and shall be attested by two or more competent witnesses while in the presence of the testator.
That's correct.
Now, in other words, your argument is that no, even setting aside this argument about where it was executed, that consistent with Washington case law, the statute provides that the testator's got to be alive.
That's correct. And as a matter of public policy, this will be set out in our...
Right. But if you're wrong about your argument, you know, we're not going to make the statute say something different because it's a matter of public policy, are we?
No. But, in fact, the public policy is reflected in the statute. And it requires that a
Public policy, I mean, the problem I have with public policy is not only what we just discussed, but apparently Arizona follows the Uniform Probate Code. And apparently the Uniform Probate Code is followed by a number of states, and if I'm not mistaken, the law under the Uniform Probate Code doesn't have any problem with post-mortem attestation.
Well, in fact, with the exception of this one Arizona Intermediate Appellate Court, every state that has the uniform law provision has rejected the idea that a post-death attestation can be reasonable as a matter of law.
Is that so?
Yes. And we've cited those cases in our briefs. I think it's at page 35. There's not a single case saying that a post-death attestation can be reasonable.
So when you say other than this intermediate appellate case, you're talking about Jung?
I'm talking about Jung.
And Jung's been followed, though, by other Arizona courts.
No, I don't believe it has, Your Honor. Not on this principle.
Which principle?
On the idea that you can have a post-death attestation that's within a reasonable time.
There are cases that talk about reasonable time and being able to execute in a reasonable time.
Well, but the question is then, is a reasonable, and of course that's a factual determination that hasn't been made here. And in Jung, the attestation was within a week of the person's death, and before there'd been any dispute about the enforceability of the will. But I'm not aware of any cases, Your Honor, that have followed Jung on that point.
Could I direct your attention back to 1112.020 and the proviso?
Yes.
Okay, so it says, provided that a last will and testament executed in the mode prescribed by the law of the place were executed or of the testator's domicile. Now we come to this clause. Either at the time of the will's execution or at the time of the testator's death. How do we know that that clause refers to execution rather than the testator's domicile? In other words, could it not be saying executed in the mode prescribed by the law of the place where executed, by Mr. Boswell's argument that would be Arizona, or of the testator's domicile, and the domicile could be either at the time of the will's execution or at the time of the testator's death, I guess recognizing that people often change their domicile in between the time they execute a will or sign a will, or at the time that they die.
Correct.
Is that a possible construction?
I don't think it's one that makes much sense given the policy reflected in the statute that two witnesses have to sign the will before the testator's death. I mean, a will becomes effective, if it becomes effective at all, when the testator dies. That's Jung. That's been the law in this state for many years. And neither under Arizona law or under Washington law was this will effective and executed at the time of Bird Hook's death.
But I'm just suggesting that a possible construction is that your limitation, you're wanting to limit it to at the time of the testator's death, however desirable that might be as a matter of policy, is it conceivable that the statute would be constructed so that that clause, which in your view, you know, makes the time of the testator's death an overriding limitation, actually only refers to the testator's domicile? So that you can be, one of the possible things, where you're trying to figure out whether the will is executed in the mode prescribed by law. Well, it could be in the mode prescribed by law of the place where it was executed, let's say Arizona, or of the testator's domicile, which could be at the time of the will's execution, that looks like that would be Arizona also,
mm-hmm.
or at the time of the testator's death, which would also be...
And even under that interpretation?
I guess then you'd go back and say that at the time of his death it was Washington, because that's what the trial court found.
That's correct.
But it says either.
That's correct. But even under that interpretation, this will was not executed because the last act necessary for it to be enforceable had not occurred under either Washington or Arizona law, because whatever you say, yes, whatever you say about Arizona law, it requires two witnesses. And at the time of the, so saying it's at the time of the will's execution just gets you back to the point, and I've got to disagree with you here, Judge Becker, on whether policy makes a difference here. Because the argument that's being made here is that you could have a testator sign, neither witness sign before his death, and then sign afterwards and said, oh, we wanted us to sign it. And as a matter of public policy, that is not something that Washington's going to do. And it's not something that Arizona does either. And it's not something that any of the other states that have interpreted this statute, the Arizona statute, would allow. And the reason they wouldn't is because it puts the witnesses in control rather than the testator.
Your Honors, we're talking about testamentary freedom. We're talking about testator's intentions. We're talking about legislative intentions. And Ms. Smith has put it on the television what the statute says, and we're having a debate about the meaning of the words and all of that. And the Supreme Court has told us that courts don't construe statutes to defeat a testator's intentions. And they've told us how many times, it's countless, that we're going to search out the intent of the legislature when we interpret statutes. The reason that we have a rule in Elliott's case, as I'm calling it, is just so. We first go find the testator's intentions, what they call the polar star, the sovereign guide, and we identify it. Now, is there a way to give it effect? And if the answer is yes, we do, because of that great blessing from the Magna Carta called testamentary freedom. So, the rules of construction, which Mrs. Smith is arguing, are prohibited by the rule of Elliott's case and the rule of Griffin's case, subsequently made, I think, by this court. Ms. Smith called it a circular issue and relied, I think, in her oral argument on the public policy of the state of Washington, as if to say that proving a valid will in Washington State can only happen before the testator dies. Subsection 2 of that statute of wills explicitly provides that the whole section of that statute is going to apply whenever a will is executed. And it was made by the legislature in response to the Reichert's case in a decision in Re Starkel, the amendment of 1990, in order to make it possible in Washington to prove up a will after the decedent is dead, after the testator has died. You can do it by affidavit. It's an alternate method. Now, has it happened? I don't know. But after, I call it post-mortem affixation, not attestation, because the second witness was there in Arizona and witnessed the testator sign his name, as did the first one, who also affixed her notary seal. But the conclusion I make is that this will from Arizona we wouldn't be here today if Anna Leavitt, the second attesting witnesses, had signed it in Arizona, such that it's an invalid will because she didn't, and it's now a Washington will and has to meet Washington formalities because she signed it in Washington. And that, to me, is a caprice that defies testamentary freedom, defies the rule of a testator's intentions, and defies the legislative intent of the statute of wills and its foreign wills proviso. That's what I see. Young is not a orphan case or some quirk of law, as they've argued before the trial court. It's mandatory authority directly on point.
Do you agree, or have you had the opportunity to consider counsel's assertion that it's the only case in the country that says that post-death attestation is a reasonable time?
I don't have the cases that I cited in my briefing in front of me today, Your Honor, but my answer would be that the Uniform Probate Code permits it in 18 states. I remember briefing that with a laundry list in one of my briefings in the trial court of other jurisdictions who have said it's okay. And that's my recollection. I wish I had brought all 10 of my binders with me, but I wasn't going to do it. So, Your Honor, in any event, I'm not aware of any case that repudiates Jung. And all of the cases that they cited in their responsive brief are domestic wills, have nothing to do with foreign wills coming into Washington. Look for the testator's intention. Look for the legislative intent. Apply the rule of Elliott's case. We're fortifying, strengthening, and doing everything we should do to give effect to a testator's intentions and the legislator's intents by reversing this and revoking those letters before all these assets dissipate.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Your Honor.